and welcome to the Slow Home Podcast. This is the podcast all about slow living in a fast-paced world. My name is Brooke McCallery.
Ben McCallery is my name. Welcome to episode 2 of our summer series, Winter Warmies. And we are really happy to be bringing you this conversation. Now, last week I spoke about how this series will be the top 5 podcasts for the last 12 months. Already broken that rule. Done.
It was your rule to begin with, so you can break it.
And I've already broken it. This is a conversation that you had way back in 2017 that we think is pretty relevant right now.
It is. So I speak to Erin Rhodes in this episode, and Erin is the woman behind The Rogue Ginger, which is a blog all about zero waste or low waste living. And it also has a really cool name. I like it a lot. And Erin is also the author of Waste Not, a book all about reducing waste, and Waste Not Every Day. Now, she hadn't even published those books when I spoke to her for this episode, but I really wanted to bring this conversation back at the beginning of the year because I know that as the environmental crises continue to become more and more apparent to more and more of us, we're asking what can we do as individuals. And one of the, not simplest, one of the closest changes that we can make is to reduce waste in our homes and in the choices that we make. And that's what Erin and I speak about at length in this episode. So it's full of practical suggestions on how to start reducing waste in your home. But it's also full of inspiration and encouragement that it's okay that you can't do it all and that you certainly won't be able to do it all tomorrow.
Yeah.
So Erin has a really powerful and yet kind of gentle way of talking about making these changes.
And I think gentle is the key here because the one thing that I got out of this conversation, and which I still use today, is the narrative you use when you have those conversations with family and friends about low waste and minimizing waste without making you feel like a martyr or being like judged.
Exactly. Yeah. It sort of removes that defensive response from people when you're talking to them about it, which I think is very common and understandable. So it's full of nugs, knowledge nugs like that. And I think that the beginning of a new year, a new decade, one where I am choosing to be filled with hope about the way the world will go, this is a fantastic place to begin.
It's a good start.
Yeah,
it's
absolutely.
Head over to slowyourhome.com/summer series for more information on Erin. This time we will have information about her book.
Definitely. And I can 100% recommend Waste Not. It's something that I refer to quite frequently, just as I'm starting to pick through all of the changes that I'm making, rather than trying to do them all at once, I'm doing them one at a time. And she is one of the reference points. So shout out to that book. And I hope you enjoy this conversation. Hello, Erin. How are you?
I'm good, Brooke. And how are you?
I'm so good. Thank you so much for talking to me.
No worries. Happy to have an excuse to send my husband on a walk with our baby. Have an adult conversation.
When you've got little ones, it's those sort of moments of being able to sit down and have an adult conversation. They really are like key. I think they were key to my well-being and my well-roundedness, I think.
Yes, there's only so many times I can sing Hickory Dickory Dock, I think, at the moment.
You were taking me way back, actually. Oh, God. I remember thinking to myself, this has got nothing to do with anything, but when our kids were just loving particular songs and they'd ask me to sing them every night when they went to bed, I'd be like, how many times will I sing this in my lifetime? How many times will this happen? And then it passes before you know it, but anyway, how old's your little one?
He is 6.5 months.
Okay.
So he's at a stage now where he just wants to play, which is great, but it's also like you don't get anything done, really.
It's a big shift, actually, from that newborn to coming into like more the infant and then God, 1 year old before you know it. But like they really shift from being quite passive to not so much.
It's a big shift, and moving and teeth, and it's just, I'm just like, can you just stop growing? Just give me 5 minutes to catch up. We'll meet back again, okay?
Yeah, exactly.
No, that's lovely. It's good.
So I want to come back. I've got a question that I wanted to ask you at the beginning. Actually, you know, I'm going to come back. It's fine. Don't mind me. I want to go back a few years for you, actually, and ask what life used to be like for you. I mean, because you're the rogue ginger. You are a zero waste advocate, and you've been writing about it and talking about it for many years. But were you always passionate about reducing your impact on the environment, or was there a catalyst, a moment that things changed for you?
I wish I could say that I was this, you know, environmentalist and, you know, keen to always make the right decision when it came towards it, but I wasn't. I was the complete opposite. I was a poor recycler if I did recycle. And it was a moment, it was a movie that I watched out of pure boredom. Mm-hmm. I was stuck at home and I was sick with a cold, and my sister gave me a call and she told me about this movie that she had watched called The Clean Bin Project. And I literally had nothing else to do, so I watched it, and it followed this couple from Canada who gave themselves the challenge to create no rubbish for a year. And it was after that movie that I went, I want to do something. I need to do something. And that was it. But prior to that, you know, I did not really care that much about the environment. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's been a very much like a big 180 kind of shift in my life, that even I think all my friends and family look back and were like, how have you become this like person who goes on TV and talks about reducing your rubbish? So, yeah, it's been interesting. And I guess it just goes to show how these kind of big changes can come out and just change your life for the better.
Absolutely. And I mean, I've got to say, I love knowing that you weren't always this person who, you know, had the highest of ideals with your environmental output and stuff like that. Like, I like the fact that you're like, no, I was pretty much the opposite. And you've managed to do this 180 with life, and now you've shifted completely to living kind of the zero or low waste philosophy. Like, how many years ago was that? I'm curious.
5 years ago.
Okay. And was the change immediate? Like, how did you go about making that shift? Did you try and kind of stop everything and turn it all around at once, or was it more a gradual shift?
No, gosh, I think if I did that, I would have ran off into the bush to make that work. But I like convenience, so I stayed in Melbourne, in mm-hmm. the city. And it all started with, like, after I watched the documentary and learned about the effects of plastic and, you know, the amount of waste that we produce, I literally jumped on the internet and typed into Google, how can I reduce my plastic?
Awesome.
As you know, like anyone has, you know, if you've got an illness or whatever, you know, you jump onto Google yep. with kind of question. And up came Plastic Free July, which had, I think, was still in its infancy. It had only been around. And I started with Plastic Free July, which I know you've covered in past podcasts. And that's how I started. I just started very slowly and just started chipping away. And I just started seeing benefits. So it made me want to kind of continue. A lot of benefits that I didn't expect. You know, I just wanted to reduce my plastic. I didn't think, you know, I'd find joy in supporting smaller businesses, or, you know, getting to know my farmers, or, you know, saving money. I didn't expect any of this at all. And, you know, also just learning to slow down and realize I don't have to be part of this fast-paced, chaotic world that we've kind of created for ourselves. I've got the power to kind of step up and say, nope, I want something different.
Yeah, I think that's brilliant. And I love that one small shift and many, many, many gradual steps have led you to that point of looking back and going, wow, I did not realize that me stopping using straws was going to impact everything. Or, you know, the fact that I stopped using Glad Wrap is going to have this huge impact. But it's the ripple effect, isn't it? Because it leads you from one thing to the next, very gradually and kind of naturally. And I guess those benefits then become the momentum that drive us forward to make the next change and the next.
Yeah, exactly. It's, I guess when you say it like that, like saying no to straws or Glad Wrap really has, you know, provide these benefits, but also showing me that, you know, I've got some power in my life to change things and make things better. Mm. You know, it kind of taught me to stop and just think, really. It's something I hadn't done for the past 28 years, really, to stop and think and look at my actions and look at how my actions affect other people and the environment and the next generation. You know, at that stage, I hadn't even thought about having kids or anything like that. And now I've got a child of my own. It's become even more, I guess, important for me to continue living this way too.
Mm. What's it? I mean, an exercise in curiosity and critical thinking, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. It definitely is. And, you know, you learn about one thing and, you know, like say the health effects of BPA and you find out, well, BPA-free is not the solution. You know, there's BPS now, which is that replacement. And then you learned about microplastics and it's a domino effect. And, you know, and they all lead into, you know, healthy eating as well and mindfulness. And, yeah, it's just all connected in a really nice way, where I found a nice place in my life, I guess, where I feel like I'm part of the environment, part of that circle.
And I do think that you're right. I mean, it sort of sits in part of this ecosystem of becoming more aware as well of our actions and our choices and the wider implications and what that can impact, not only in terms of the rubbish that we produce, but the work that we do and the food that we eat and the way that we parent and the way that we are a friend to someone, you know, and the way we operate in a community. And it really is kind of part of this greater ecosystem, I think, of living this switched on, kind of, yeah, connected, aware, maybe community-minded life, that I find people will often pick one thing that they want to pursue, like, you know, reducing plastic or mindfulness or meditation or decluttering or something, and then gradually over time they find themselves sort of in the mix of all of these other things, and it starts to seep into other areas of their life. And did you find that, you know, as you started to reduce your waste, that other areas of your life were unexpectedly impacted? I mean, you mentioned food, but was there anything else?
I think, yeah, food was a big one for me, and that ultimately led me to, I think, connecting with my community more, not just like supporting local businesses, but just being involved in my community, just opening up to what's going on. You know, being aware of, you know, what's happening in the local parks, you know, activities that are going on, becoming more, I guess, grateful for the services I've got around me and the hard work that people put into them. Also just being happy with enough. I think that was another one. They all like had these kind of domino effects. Like I didn't think that, you know, I'd be learning how to cook vegetables from my local farmer or something like that. Like I can go and ask him when he has something new and available, I can be like, well, how do I cook this? And then I can listen to his story and where does my money then go to support him? And also, you know, connecting with local community groups as well, or just all the hard work that people go into trying to create a really nice place for me to live in, I think has been, has kind of opened my eyes. I've gone from, I suppose, being this mindless consumer to being an active citizen. And we're kind of just treated as consumers, but we're not. We're, you know, we're living, breathing people who are moving about in these spaces. And once you stop and have a look around, you're kind of part of that. You know, you're part of the reason that makes it great.
Exactly. And there's so much that we can do. I think we spend a lot of time feeling powerless, you know, to make any kind of impact. But I think you're absolutely right that this sort of switching on to the connectedness of things and the fact that we are part of something can lead us to feeling less powerless and maybe more like there's something we can do, no matter how small. I think, and that's one of the questions I wanted to ask you, going back a minute. We were sort of talking about this ripple effect and how one change leads to the next and how, you know, it's this big ecosystem of living, you know, a more aware kind of life. But I think one of the problems people often come to me with is they can see all of that and they feel really overwhelmed by, you know, the fact that maybe this one change is going to lead them down this path of changing everything and they're not ready for it. Do you have any advice, I guess, for people who feel overwhelmed? You know, maybe they want to start simplifying or reducing their waste, but they're terrified that everything's just going to snowball and it's going to become this all-consuming life change?
In that case, yes, I have had that question before, and I advise people not to look at anybody else's journeys, mm-hmm. I guess, which is really odd for me to say because I get up and I talk about my own journey. I guess what I mean is don't compare your journey to anyone else's. So, for instance, when I first started my lifestyle, there was only, say, two other people, I guess, sharing it in a way, and I just made a habit not to look at what they were doing. I took on their tips, but I was like, my life won't look like that because I live in a different location. I got different needs. And I also did it very slowly. I did it very, very slowly because I read something about environmental guilt. And environmental guilt is when you want to make all these huge drastic changes to improve everything, but then you, for instance, you forget to say no to plastic straw. And so then you think, oh, I'm a failure. I'm not even going to bother with this. And you give up.
Yeah.
And it's very mm-hmm. easy to give up. But instead, just take things slowly. Otherwise, that environmental guilt will just swallow you up and spit you back out. And just do things that work well for your life. There's no race to do any of this. Just be happy with the kind choices that you're making, I think. And, yeah, I just – yeah, don't look at anybody else's life. I found that during pregnancy too. I had a really rotten pregnancy and I would read blogs, you know, trying to look for help, and I just got a bit depressed because I felt like my pregnancy wasn't their pregnancy, and I felt a bit like a failure because of it. And I was like, I just needed to take my own advice with what I tell other people. Don't compare your circumstances to someone else. Just take some tips and apply them as you can to fit your life. At the end of the day,
I think it's such solid advice because, you know, it's so easy, I guess, to look at. I always go to social media as an example here, but, you know, these snapshots of other people's efforts or other people's journeys or the way they're living, and to compare that to what we know of our own lives, which is not a snapshot. You know, we're seeing the highlight reels on social media, on blogs, and we know every intimate detail of our own lives, every failing, every frustration, every struggle. And people don't often talk about those publicly. So I think it's really good advice to take the tips, take the golden wisdom from other people's experiences, but then apply them to your life in a way that works for you.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I was actually thinking about this the other day. My son is now sitting up and reaching out for things and obviously falling when he does. And I kept putting the things in front of him so he wouldn't fall. I was like, wait a minute, he's not going to learn to put his hand out to kind of learn to not, you know, fall. So I just left him and I said, you know, that's what I did. And that's what I tell people to do. Like, there's going to be instances where you will, you know, forget to say no to a straw, or you might forget to take your bags. And that's okay. You'll learn to find a way to remember it for yourself. You'll learn to make these changes that suit you. So you kind of expect those hiccups, they're going to happen. That's okay. You can start again fresh tomorrow.
Yeah.
And just make sure it just works for your life, and don't look at someone who's got like maybe a jar of waste and be like, I'll never get that. I mean, no one says you have to keep a jar of waste with your waste. There's no rule anywhere that says that. Just some weirdos that do that. No, they're not weirdos. But like, I've got a jar of waste. I keep it because I take it to schools. And, you know, kids go through it and we have a chat about, you know, rubbish and whatnot. But you don't need to do that. Like, who would do that? Someone said it's like taxidermy for waste. I'm like, yeah, it's pretty weird.
But I think, I mean, I get it. It's like the same kind of reason that I counted the first 25,000 things that I decluttered from our house, because it was motivating, you know, like it was an accountability measure that worked for me. But then for many similar reasons, I actually stopped doing that because I felt like it was an accountability measure that I was using to self-flagellate, you know.
Yeah.
And it's like that was stopping me from living the benefits of the kind of life that we were trying to create, which was actually, you know, more time and more space and more energy and joy, and kind of feeling like I wasn't living up to some made up expectation of what simplicity looked like meant that I wasn't enjoying any of it anyway. So I think that, yeah, removing maybe our expectations of what things will look like is a good place to kind of start from as well.
Yeah, and I'll never tell anyone that it's easy, ever. No. I won't, you know. I will happily get up in my talks and happily jump on radio and whatnot and, you know, people ask questions like, it's not easy. You know, making changes is hard and you've just got to accept that. But people make changes all the time. So, you know, and humans are highly adaptable creatures. And we can do it. We just got to put our minds to it and we can do anything.
Absolutely. And I think we need that driving, motivating factor because otherwise it's just going to be much easier to continue on with the status quo. So do you have a particular idea or an image or something that you use to motivate you to continue to change and improve?
Responsibility. I think responsibility is my biggest drive mm-hmm. in terms of, I guess I look at it this way, you go into say a room and there's a mess in there and someone's told you have to clean it up and you're like, well, I didn't make this mess. It's not very fair. I guess that's kind of in the way of, you know, all this rubbish that we're creating. The next generations, because it's probably going to be several generations, are going to have to pick up the rubbish that I've made and it's not really fair. Why should they have to do that? It's my responsibility. The rubbish that I make, it's my responsibility and I can do better. I can do better for them. You know, it's I think of things like a landfill site. Once it comes to the end of its life, what happens with the landfill site is that it will be covered over and with dirt eventually and then it can't be used for, I think, 20 to 25 years, that space.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, you can't even plant a tree on it, which really makes me sad.
Mm.
But they've got plans, you know, to open them up eventually to be, you know, spaces where people can go and, you know, there'll be a park or something. But I'm like, you won't even be able to plant a tree there or a building or anything because there's just that risk of everything sinking and releasing very toxic fumes into the air. And I'm like, why should my son or, you know, and his friends and, you know, and his children, et cetera, be stuck with this? You know, it's just not their responsibility. We can all do better, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I think one of the biggest factors, I mean, I'm sitting here trying to think, why isn't that sense of responsibility innate in us? I mean, why do you think that it's not an innate thing? Like, why do you think that we have to be re-educated to be held responsible for our own mess?
I would think it might be having to deal with some, I guess, looking at ourselves. We have to really kind of look at what causes these behaviors, and they're not so very nice traits, I guess, that we would see in ourselves. And, you know, when I had to go through making my changes, I did kind of have to hold a mirror up to myself, like, why am I such a, you know, mindless consumer? Why do I not think about this stuff? And does it come, am I greedy? Am I lazy? Am I, you know, and I had to look at some things. So I think that might be it, just having to hold that mirror up to ourselves and tackling some parts of our personality that, you know, aren't very nice, perhaps, and learning to, I guess, shake them off a little bit. And I think that's probably where it can be a bit difficult for people. And also trying or not wanting to be a difficult person. I think we're not very good at speaking up and saying we want things different because we might be afraid of causing trouble.
Yes.
And I always tell people, if you go to a cafe and you know, have a discussion with them about straws, or, you know, you take your own container to the deli to get, I don't know, hummus or dalmatis, or you can tell I'm married to a Middle Eastern by saying
like, I'm coming to your house.
So, and if they say no and you can explain why, don't think that you're coming from a place of, you know, causing any trouble. You're coming from a place of kindness, like you're trying to do a kind action. So I think, yeah, people don't want to be that person who's, you know, going to cause someone trouble. To me, I think that's what it is. It's, looking at those dark parts of our personality and not wanting to cause trouble.
Yeah, I mean, we don't like being uncomfortable. I think we as humans go to very great lengths to distance ourselves from discomfort of lots of different kinds, you know, and I think that that's certainly a big part of it, because it's uncomfortable to question ourselves or to, as you say, hold a mirror up to ourselves and say, I am part of the problem, you know?
Yeah.
It's really difficult. No one likes doing it. I constantly do it and I constantly feel uncomfortable about it, but you can use it as a motivator to increase your sense of responsibility, increase the things that you do rather than the things that you worry about. You know, I think there's a kind of a bit of a disconnect there too, where we're mired in this eco-anxiety feeling, this, you know, this guilt, and we kind of use that as an excuse to not do anything. But it's the act of doing, of taking the container to the deli, of asking the question at the coffee shop, that's where I think you start to loosen the grip of that guilt, even if there are any small actions. In my experience, they've actually freed me up to take bigger steps. Have you found the same thing?
Yeah, I think it gives you confidence, you know, to take another step and try something different, you know. You know, I remember when I first went to the deli, I remember I was very scared, and I think I circled the block, like walked around it once and twice, like, no, I can do this. And they didn't bat an eye. They didn't care. And you're like, what was I even scared
about?
And you know, and I've had some people maybe turn me away, but now I'm better at having conversations. It just gives you the confidence and makes you, you know, it puts the power back in your hands. Like, oh, wait, you know, I can ask for something different. Mm. I can do this.
Yeah, I remember the first time I went to the butcher and I asked him if he could put the mince or whatever in a jar. I brought this big glass jar with me and he looked at me. He's like, why would, yeah, I suppose. Okay, thanks. And he put it in a plastic bag and put it inside the jar. I'm like, I feel like you missed the point. So I left and was so embarrassed that I didn't go back for months, and then I stopped eating meat, so it didn't matter. But it's funny, my kids still eat meat occasionally, and when we go in, it's like, oh, here they are, the people who started it all. And he said, everyone, every second person is bringing in their glass jars now. I'm like, yes, see?
See, that's it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what, sometimes we've got to remember that these business owners have not come across this yet.
Exactly.
Like, to them it's still very confusing. Like, why? And then you've got to kind of remind them, like, hey, our great-grandparents did this. And they'll stop and pause. They're like, you're right, they probably did. And you'll come across the casual older deli owner or baker or something. They're like, yeah, I remember my grandparents doing this. Like, this used to be normal.
Yeah.
So I think we've got to just give them space as well and not get angry at them, because they just might not get it.
Yeah, and that's been my experience.
If it's busy, like if you go there during a busy period, you know, and you're like, can you put this into the container? And they're like, I don't even know how to do this on my system. So, of course, they might say no. If you come back or you phone ahead, you know, there's ways around it as well. I think we've got to meet each other, you know, in the middle.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's really good advice come at it from kindness, as you say, and from a place of patience and understanding that, like, it's not maybe entirely new to us, but it probably is to a lot of people. Do you have any tips on how to broach the subject if you're in a store or you're looking for a service who will allow you to use your own reusables?
I usually keep it simple because I don't want to make anyone feel bad. Mm. That's the last thing I ever want to do. I'll never kind of shame anyone. But I'll just explain. I'm just trying to use some, like, less plastic. I'm giving myself a challenge to reduce my plastic footprint. And I'll usually throw in the thing, you know, just like how our great-grandparents used to live. You know, they use, like, hardly any plastic. And just so they can, you know, relate it in a way, instead of being all like, you know, the oceans are going to fill up with plastic if we don't do something now. I don't want to scare people. I just, you know, I want to make it, I guess, just friendly, light conversation. And, you know, over time, once we've, you know, built up a rapport, I'll explain a little bit more about my lifestyle, and, you know, I'll even throw in, you could possibly save some money by, you know, not giving out all these plastic bags. Mm-hmm. Like, they cost a bit for your business, and, you know, and they'll agree, like, oh yeah, it does cost, you know, $5,000 a year, you know, I could save on that. So it's just building up that rapport and not shaming anyone, because they just might not know, and you can't shame someone if they don't know. You know, it's really unfair.
Yeah, and that kind of just dumps people in the deep end too, you know, that place of anxiety and overwhelm that we sometimes find ourselves in, that just throws them right in there without any warning either. And that's kind of maybe more, you're more likely to then just put your hands over your ears and kind of pretend and hope that it all goes away, because what do you do from there, you know, from going from not understanding the issue at all to being dumped in the oceans of filling with plastic kind of piece is really disconcerting and probably not that helpful to drive action and change.
Exactly. You know, just because you've learnt how to do something doesn't mean that someone else knows how to do it yet or understands. It's kind of, it's almost like teaching someone how to dance or something. You've got to take it slow and be patient and they'll get there eventually. And, you know, I've had some people say no and that's okay. I'll go back and try again maybe and explain a bit more, and I'll pick the times of days, you know, as well. I'm really mindful about my own actions, and I guess put myself into their shoes. I would hate it if someone came and started yelling at me and making me feel bad. I wouldn't change, you know. I'd probably be quite stubborn and be like, and just ignore them. Where if you do it with kindness and mindful of their own situation, they're probably going to listen to you, I think.
Sorry, I just had to take a drink of water.
No, that's okay.
Do I do it? Do I not? Do I do it? Can I ask then, what is one thing, if someone's listening and they've maybe heard of Plastic Free July, or they're keen to make a shift and they're only just beginning, what's one thing that you would recommend that they start with?
I would look in your bin first to see what is that one item that you probably use the most. So it could be plastic bags, be takeaway coffee cups, could be straws, but I'm going to hedge a bet it's probably plastic bags or takeaway coffee cups, or even just plastic takeaway containers, and start swapping out. Just pick a couple weeks and pretend that item doesn't exist, and just invest in a reusable bag. Or as much as I like to tell people to get a reusable coffee cup, I'm more of the mind, take 10 minutes and sit down and enjoy your cup of coffee or hot chocolate or tea, and or take a container to the deli, or, you know, a cloth bag to the bakery. Just look at what rubbish you are creating the most of. Don't look at what everyone else is swapping out. Just look to see where you can make an improvement. And usually it's plastic bags. I think that's probably the best place to start, would be a plastic bag.
Yeah, and that's one of those things that you build that habit quite quickly as well, of grabbing the bags on the way out or leaving them in the boot of the car, having a couple in the bottom of your handbag. And it really is quite a simple change to make. I think that's probably my first significant shift. And then I bought, you know, the produce bags, and that was really easy. And then people would comment on them at the grocery shop and I'd feel good about it and tell them where I bought them. You know, and that's, from there it becomes just this one small change after another that actually leads to significant change. Okay, so one of the things that people will always ask me about, actually there's two, and I'd like to pick your brain on them. First thing is cheese. People find it really difficult to get, like, just your standard cheddar cheese that kids like in their lunch boxes without plastic wrapping, because most of the delis will already sell things pre-wrapped, or they won't sell that kind of just, you know, your bog standard cheddar cheese. Do you have any suggestions?
Okay, this is unfair because I live in Melbourne and there's a place that sells unwrapped cheddar cheese with no wax on it. So if you are in Melbourne, there's a great place at Queen Vic Market that do it, called Curds and Whey. If you live elsewhere, you're going to have to buy a cow and start milking.
The red hot tip is to move to Melbourne. Okay, got it.
Yeah. Otherwise, I would just have a chat with them and let them know about your predicament and see what they can do. Now, you could get them and you could find perhaps like-minded people in your area, and you could say, we want to invest in a wheel of cheese, and you could divvy it up that way.
Okay.
How would you find those people? Great question. So you can jump on Facebook, and there are now quite a growing number of zero waste communities all throughout Australia and the world, and you can get in there and say, I live in this suburb. Is there anyone else here? and you might be able to find those like-minded people. So I think that would be the easiest way. It would be to invest in a wheel of cheese. Oh, yeah. You can sometimes get smaller wheels. Like a deli can order in food for you too.
Mm.
So I would chat with them in either, you know, early morning or towards the end of the day when it's not as busy, and just let them know why you're wanting to do it. And do you know what? If you speak to any true cheese connoisseur, they'd say you don't store your cheese in plastic.
Anyway, it's
like worse for it.
It's very true. Okay, wheel of cheese, move to Melbourne. Okay, excellent.
Yeah.
And then this is something that I struggle with. One of our kids loves wraps. That's what he has for lunch. And I have yet to find an option that isn't me making them, because I don't think that I could do that. And that is not wrapped in plastic. Do you have any suggestions for wraps for school lunches?
The only suggestion for that one would be if you have someone in the area that makes something like that, like a baker or anything.
Okay.
They might be able to do it. I know a lot of places that will sell their pizza dough to people who don't want to make their own pizza dough. You just take your own container and they'll give access to you. Bakeries will do that as well. You can phone up and see if they'll sell you, you know, some pastry, shortcrust pastry, anything you want they might have left over. You know, I'm not a DIY person all the time. I will call up businesses and be like, do you have this? Can I perhaps just buy it from you? Because I don't have time to make everything from scratch.
Yeah.
I wish I did. But I do like sleeping.
So. Yeah, exactly. If I had 37 hours every day, I would possibly find a way of making my own wraps. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think that that's important as well, to give people permission to say, hey, you don't have to make it all. It's just a matter of thinking outside the box and figuring out how you can source things without all the excess packaging.
Yeah. I feel like there's this need, or this, like, you know, if you sign up to live zero waste or plastic free, you need to make everything from scratch because that's how they did the olden days and life was simple then. But bakeries have existed since the Roman times, so there's been quite a few people who didn't want to bake their own bread and, you know, went to the bakery. I think it's okay to not make your own bread and stuff like that. Like, people have made stuff and we've gone and bought it from them for thousands of years, and it's perfectly fine for us to continue doing that. You know, it's, people enjoy that stuff. You know, I don't love making bread, but there's a baker down the road who loves it, and I'm going to support his passion. So, you know, that's another way to look at it. You're supporting people's passions, their businesses. Don't feel the need to make everything from scratch. That's crazy.
Well, it is, you know, and I spoke a few weeks ago with Robin Rosenfeld from Pip magazine, and she was talking about this idea of self-sufficiency, and it was the thing that we were kind of all trying to work towards a few years ago, because to be self-sufficient was, you know, the ultimate end goal. And she said, but self-sufficiency is a miserable existence, because can you imagine how much work goes into just sourcing everything for one part of life? She said, it's being part of a community that is self-sufficient is much more the key. So, you know, supporting your baker, supporting your cheesemaker, working with your farmer, growing some of your own, swapping with your neighbors, all that kind of stuff is actually part of becoming part of a self-sufficient community rather than a self-sufficient individual. And I thought that was really helpful to reframe that idea.
Exactly. Like, I was thinking with your wraps question, do you have a friend or a mum or, you know, a brother, someone who might like to do that, and you could trade them for something and you could just pop those wraps in the freezer or something, you know, see what you can outsource, I guess, you know.
You've got my brain ticking over now with that. But I think it's important to think that way rather than think, okay, well, there's no one that sells them that's not in plastic, so I give up. Yeah, I think that's a really good suggestion of like crowdsourcing, you know, community sourcing things.
Exactly. Now we've got the internet and Facebook. What I've loved about Facebook recently is just all these communities that pop up of people that want to connect and help each other out, like the Good Karma Networks, also the Zero Waste Communities, is they just want to help each other. And, you know, you realize you can't do everything. You need that community for this to work. Mm. You need to rely on each other. Otherwise, it doesn't work at all.
Can I ask, before we finish up, how has zero waste or plastic-free living changed for you since you've had your son? Have you noticed a big shift?
No, not yet. Mm-hmm. It's all been pretty easy, only because he's so little and I'm obviously breastfeeding, so that's why it's a bit easier. But I am starting to see it get a little bit harder soon in terms of Christmas coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I guess now he's getting into solids, onto foods. I'm starting to see the conversations I'm going to have in the future. I think that's going to be tricky, trying to not make him feel like I'm depriving him in any way. Even though I can be like, well, he's only, you know, 6.5 months now, that time's going to move pretty quickly where I'm going to have to be like, no, you can't have that, or and trying to explain that to him without being the bad mum, I guess.
Yeah.
And also to other parents and family members who want to obviously shower their grandchild or, you know, or him with presents and stuff that we don't necessarily need. You know, I've signed up to a toy library. We've got access to great toys and, yeah, just I think just having those conversations without sounding horrible, that's going to be the hard part for me, I think.
Yeah, I think that's something that a lot of people struggle with, how to be strong in their desires to live a particular way without sounding ungrateful or judgmental or, you know, accusatory. It's a really difficult balance, I think, to strike, because we don't live in a vacuum. You know, we being in relationships with people does mean compromises need to be made. But, you know, it's this kind of tension between compromising and educating without, you know, preaching. It's a really tricky thing to navigate, I think. And I don't think there's one right answer at all. But I also think that the more people are talking about this stuff, the better, because it's maybe not going to only be from you or one person that they're hearing this either. And I think that that is probably going to be where we start to see big shifts, people hearing about it from various areas and thinking, okay, so it's not just them being difficult. This is actually a whole movement.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I'm like, I get some practice these days. So I'm one of very few parents that I know in my circle that uses cloth nappies and people ask, you know, why are you doing that? And it's like, how do I explain it without sounding like some, you know, like I'm on my high horse about, you know, reducing my rubbish and stuff. So I, you know, I try to be tactful about it and usually kind of use money saving as one, because that's a popular accessible point. And I do kind of say, oh, you know, I just don't want to create so much rubbish, you know, kind of thing. But people kind of glaze over when I say that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, why would you create extra work? Like, I don't get it. But,
and this is the thing that we're up against, isn't it? It's like the convenience versus responsibility conversation again, that I think just needs to be ongoing. I do like what you said, and I've done this myself before, when people are kind of resistant to a request or a change that I've made, is this idea of I'm doing an experiment, or, you know, I'm challenging myself. And I think people are much more amenable to that than just the kind of in your face, this is the way I'm living my life, even if that's where you're at. You know, I think it's a really nice way of describing a shift to say I'm experimenting, because people can, they can understand that, you know, they can say, okay, all right, I can get behind that.
Yeah. It's kind of like, you know, I guess we're so used to hearing people, you know, I'm trying this diet, or, you know, I'm trying dry July or something, you know, it's just another thing that people, I guess, are trying. And I guess it makes it a bit more accessible to people. And I think that's the trick, is just making these lifestyle switches accessible and not make them seem so scary, really. Or like, as you said before, overwhelming, like they're going to have to just change everything about their life kind of thing.
Exactly. And I think that's what you do so incredibly well, is that you give people the power to make small changes. You know, you genuinely do give people, like, you arm them with, I guess, knowledge and tips and suggestions on how to go about making these changes. But you also encourage people. I often think about you writing the letter about the blister packs of tablets. Like, I thought that was just such a brilliant example of saying, hey, actually, I can do something. And if enough of us do something, then they have to listen. you know, and I think I spoke about it in the Plastic Free July episodes, but essentially you were looking at your rubbish, correct me if I'm wrong here, and you realized that if the tablet manufacturers created their blister packs differently, they'd be recyclable, but they weren't because they were plastic. So instead of owning that and feeling bad about that yourself, you pushed it back to them and said, hey, what about this? Why can't we do it this way? And I just think that that simple act of writing a letter empowers people to say, hey, what else can I do?
Oh, exactly. I think we, if we all did that a bit more, we just sent things back that we're not happy with, change will eventually happen. And people do listen. You know, they might, they'll acknowledge a return, you know, like a response, but they might not make change straight away because they might not have thought about it and they've got to think about their own products as well. So when I wrote back to them, I sent them back an example of how to change it and I got a response straight away. And Women's Weekly actually covered the story last month and they even responded to them and said, you know, we're going to look into this. So don't ever think that you're not being listened to. You know, those letters do add up. You know, corporations, when they receive a certain amount of responses to a problem, they have to respond to it in some way. It's don't think that, you know, that your voice is not being heard. It absolutely is. It absolutely is. And change doesn't happen immediately, unfortunately, just the way it is, especially with a bigger business. So keep writing those letters, you know, send your rubbish back if you're not happy with it. We didn't agree to a lot of this. It's just kind of been, you know, put on the shelves for us. If you're not happy with it, send it back. If we do send things back and we say we're not happy with them, they're going to act on things. They're going to change. But we need to do that. Can't just like stuff things into my trash jar and expect things to change and write my blog and, you know, just sit around and wait. I've got to take action too. You know, my mum, she's done something recently too. She contacted a laundry powder company to say, why do we need all these plastic scoops? And they went back to her and said, well, we're actually now phasing them out and we're not going to provide them. So someone else has obviously, you know, brought that up with them and now they're making changes. So it just goes to show that we can, you know, access and get a response and hopefully create some change that way.
Absolutely. People power. It's just actually doing something rather than thinking about doing something.
Exactly. Yeah. If we just think about it, it's not going to change. And if we just stay silent and, you know, and angry about it, nothing will change. You know,
we'll just get angry.
Yeah. It's like voting, you know, not just with our wallets, but speaking up. We can't buy our way out of this problem. We've got to speak up too.
Absolutely. I could not agree more. Erin, thank you so much for talking to me and empowering us to do more, but also just to do what we can do. I think the takeaway for me is small steps fine, but take the steps. Like, that's the key. We actually have to make the changes. We have to do the thing. We have to send the letter or write the email or tweet the tweet and, yeah, actually do. So thank you so much for your encouragement and your time.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Hi, Puck Pass.